Today is Tuesday, April 2nd, and you're listening to the Beer Temple Podcast.
Remember, this is what we wanted. Remember, this is what we said. To never be heard or seen from again, 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 again. Remember, this is what we wanted. Remember, this is what we said. To never be heard or seen from again, 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 again.
Hello, and welcome to the Beer Temple Podcast. I'm your co-host, Mike Shalow of Is Was Brewing, and I'm here with your other co-host, Chris Quinn of the Beer Temple. Chris, how are you doing?
Good. Very sultry.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I'm moving a little slow. We did a collaboration with a ramen restaurant, and I dropped some of the beer off while they were open and ate a double noodle bowl of ramen, so... the sultriness is more just
disgust with myself
and
self-loathing,
the sodium coursing through my veins.
Okay,
but no, it's, beer's delicious.
All right,
it might come up later, but yeah, no, I'm doing good. Otherwise, how are you, Chris?
Good.
I mean, otherwise, I'm still doing good, even because of that.
Yes,
ramen's delicious. Akahoshi ramen.
Okay, good, good.
Plug.
Yeah.
no free ads. I'm going to charge them for that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'm doing good. Good to be here. We should probably do an official. We have to get a little bit more official with our starts. We have to thank the listeners. Have to thank everyone.
We're still doing the start.
Yeah,
we can thank them right now.
105.5. I know. We have to thank Lumpin' Radio 105.5 FM WLPN for having us on, and for everyone who listens to us via the airwaves there, and for those of you who listen via download. Thanks for listening. And thanks to the fearless leaders over there. Thanks to the fearless leader here who's helping fade things in and out.
That fade was so smooth.
Yeah, it was great. It was a good one. Yeah, it was a great one. You can't see because we're not a visual medium right now. Maybe we'll get back to that someday. But
I I saw something in the wild today that I don't think I've ever actually seen before. I took a video of it. But it's not great for the radio, but it was someone with a Hoppin' Frog sticker on their car.
Oh, that was Sam.
It was Sam because when I went to the restaurant, Sam was sitting there.
Yeah.
That was definitely Sam.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Nobody else in the world but Sam
has
a Hoppin' Frog. But it's amazing. It doesn't take away from the joy you felt when you saw it.
No, I swung in. I was parked illegally because I was running in to do this delivery. I put my flashers on, and I had to like sit there for a second, and be like, "Is that a Hoppin' Frog? Like a faded Hoppin' Frog sticker?" Of course, I knew it was immediately. I didn't have to ask myself. It's iconic artwork, but
right, it timeless.
Timeless. Yeah,
it is timeless.
It has no time.
Yeah, it's true. It is timeless. Yeah, that's Sam, one of our longtime employees here, bartender.
Yeah, that was Sam, because I ended up sitting next to Sam while I ate that ramen.
B-Wiz, aficionado.
Yeah, Dimp Simp.
Mm-hmm. Dimp Simp, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was down with Sam and another employee here at...
Can't name him, though, huh?
J-Max.
Yeah.
Scratch. this past... not this weekend, but the week before.
Yeah.
Not for we didn't go for Easter. We didn't all go for Easter, but the previous weekend we all went
to Scratch. You're a big church guy.
Mm-hmm. And we brewed a bunch of beers down there. So Sam was pretty blown away by being down there.
I've never been, but I imagine it is mind blowing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I think all the things that I had been kind of talking about, just to kind of realize in person when you're down there, they were. They seemed pretty blown away. They were effusive with their gratitude. And I was like, don't thank me, man.
Yeah,
like,
you guys drove yourself 5 hours.
Yeah,
here.
Exactly. it was really cool. Also, on the way out, we ate. We all had a big like barbecue dinner. There's a famous barbecue restaurant, like very like nationally recognized barbecue place down there, which is just odd.
I mean, you're not far from like St. Louis.
Right, it's true. And it was pouring rain, and Aaron said, well, this means, you know, Morels are going to be out, you know, tomorrow, the first Morels. And then he's like, that or the next day. And I was like, oh, wow, that's cool. And then, yeah, lo and behold, on their Instagram the next day, it was a bunch of Morel mushrooms.
You guys had left.
We had just left. But I just thought it was pretty amazing that he's like, oh, okay, it's raining. That means Morels will be up.
He can, like, feel when the Morels are coming in his bones.
Right, yeah. And they hadn't been up that year, but he knew, like, okay, this time of year, it's this temperature. Next time it rains, they will be out. And lo and behold.
He is one with the land.
He is one with the land, at least that land out there.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. We'll be doing some sort of event with them.
Cool.
So, yeah. We got an old-fashioned Insiders Roundtable.
We do.
So we should probably get to
it.
Yeah. Yeah, we have an exciting panel. Mm-hmm. We'll introduce people in the order we always do, which is order of seniority.
Mm-hmm.
That being how many times you've been on the show.
Right, the only seniority that matters.
The only seniority that matters. And the senior member of the panel is Mr. Niall. Yeah, you would think I would know how to pronounce their name. Niall Zacherly of Mad Fritz Brewing. What's up, man? How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah.
a beautiful day in California here.
How's your butt feeling?
Yeah, I got kicked in the butt.
Yeah.
what a question.
Letting yeah. incident that's kind of put me back. I've never been in so much pain. But, you know, I had beer and
you
wine.
Broke your butt bone for those of you.
Broke your butt bone, yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Don't do it. It's not worth it.
Yeah, if you were thinking of trying it out, don't.
Just, yeah, I don't just, know. I want to see what it's like, you know? I want to break a bone.
Well, Ron tried it, and he's got a story.
Trying. Yeah. Generous.
yeah, everything's good. We're brewing beer tomorrow and packaging member beers, and we're working on some wine today. I'm up at the winery at David Arthur right now, but drinking a beer after tasting wine all day, so I just... I've got a bottle of wine here to taste, but beer just sounds so much better than a glass of wine. So I've got a glass of beer and I'm excited to get into these subjects. These topics. This is so awesome.
Yeah, man.
So good to see you guys.
Good to see you too.
What are you brewing tomorrow?
The kind of Czech pils, Bohemian, Pivo pils. I don't know what it is. It's just our classic, Pilsner, the last batch we used Angwin spring water, and this batch we're just going to use our kind of reservoir water. But yeah, Hallertau, U.S. Hallertau, Tetanag biotransformation, and then we'll barrel age it for a couple months. But we're just about out of the last batch, and it's just so good, and it's starting to warm up. And yeah, you need a good barrel aged Pilsner for this season.
And for those out there who have not had the Mad Fritz beer, when you hear barrel age, that could mean a variety of different barrel characteristics. What kind of character are you hoping to pull from the barrel for this Pilsner, if any?
So good question. So the barrel does a number of different things, and it really depends on what barrels are available. I mean, I could get some new French oak, although we found that the new French oak kind of overwhelms the beer, and it's a shorter barrel time. A neutral French oak that's been used before is preferable just because as we rack, once the beer is settled in the fermenter and we've cropped yeast, and typically when we do the biotransformation, there's a lot of hop pellets and material in there. So we'll do what's called kind of a dirty rack to the barrel. So we'll allow some of the hops to transfer into the barrel, and we'll clean it out later. But the other purpose of the barrel is to kind of, you know, develop the beer, settle the beer. The beer will be lightly pressurized in the barrel. So you get that settling, that lagering. Of course, the temperature is starting to warm up as we come into spring here. And so that's kind of a concern. So this is probably one of our last lagers that we'll be able to pull off in our cellar as things start to move into the 60s. So it is really kind of a conditioning vessel, if you will. So that's really the main purpose. So I want it to be pretty malt driven and forward with the hops and kind of keep the wood in the background. So
right.
Purpose is more conditioning.
Yeah, I figured that, but I think a lot of people probably think of like spirit barrels and or
yes, in the bourbon barrel aged.
Yeah, bourbon barrel aged a Czech lager. I won't go into it too much because I went into it in detail 2 episodes ago. But you would have gotten a kick out of some of these. It's funny, he's drinking wine, but it's or beer, but it's blurred out, so it just looks like he's miming drinking. Anyway, let's not talk about the visuals. Niall, you would have gotten a kick out of some of these places in the West Midlands that I visited, some of these old breweries out in England, and just like some of the crazy stuff that they were doing, just because that's just how they'd always done it. But specifically like infinite yeast generations, just you know, nice. Top cropping forever, having I think 3 different house strains that I think are kind of all together. I think they might have had a lager that they kind of somewhat kept separate, but not really knowing what the house yeast was. They had it banked, but they had never had it analyzed, yeah, just literally pulling a siphon out and top cropping and then using that for the next pitch and just doing it literally for, I mean, who knows? I mean, they've been around since for over 100 years, but I'm sure they've restarted their yeast since then, but it was...
That's not part of the lore.
No, they were... the fact that they do... Here's the cool thing about, like, we were just talking about Scratch and places like this, like... These places don't do it romantically, so
right.
They didn't say that they had been. They didn't pretend that they had been pitching it forever. I was with a brewer, and he was just kind of just like chuckling about how they just you know use infinite generations of this yeast. Because for those of you who are not in the brewing profession who are listening, you know what is typical, Mike, of a normal production brewery? How many generations of yeast would you use?
Depends on the brewery, like 3 to 12, 15, right. Depending on how like
sure.
much you want to push something and what styles of beers you're making.
Right. Not
not infinity.
Right. And I think, you know, like I said, I think they've, you know, redone their yeast or something, but it easily could be 20 plus years since they've
sure.
done it. So
a couple top cropping and open fermenting, you have much less stress on your yeast, so you can keep getting the healthiest cells actually flocculate to the top during krausen. So
yeah,
whereas you're getting
how does the beer taste?
Very good question.
Bad.
Great.
No,
at Holden, the one place that we went to that I was specifically talking about, the beers were all really nice. Lots of different types of bitters. They had some milds and, you know, just as you would expect, some just classic English beers. They were really nice. Other ones, really sweet in the Midlands, a couple other places we went to. And then we went to London, and those beers were the beers we drank there. They weren't necessarily all from London, but those beers were absolutely wonderful as well. So, yeah, it was great. But... I was, you know, when I'm at different places, I just think of different friends of mine and who would kind of appreciate it. And, I think you would have dug just some of the, I don't know, just the ways they did things.
So I got your list of, what our agenda, and then I started, as one does, they start Googling things, and I came across the historic BrewCon Manchester, August 5th and 6th, 2024.
Wow.
And I just was like, look, who are the speakers? And you're like, wow, what a cool event. And you see just what's going on in the UK, and it's for beer. And yeah, it's, I mean, like what you did, that what an adventure. I mean, there's just so much to learn and see.
I'm interested to see who are the speakers. Do you have them pulled up now or no?
Yeah, I do. Let's see.
Are the speakers of the historic BrewCon in Manchester, England in August of 2024?
Gotta be Pattinson.
Okay, we got speakers. Yeah, here we got keynote speakers are Pete Brown.
Okay. Yep. makes sense.
Jane Payton.
Okay.
And then we got speakers are Mike Benson, Andrew Davison, Lars Morris.
Okay.
Of Gartel, Gary Four. Gilman, Laura Hadland, Dr. Christina Wade, Dr. Brian Costello, Johnny Garrett, Johnny Horn, Douglas Hoverson, John Keeling, James Sanford.
Oh.
They all have, I didn't get to all of them when I was kind of checking their
profiles. They're probably brewers or owners of just like small historic breweries, I would imagine. Yeah.
And Pete Brown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is cool. Friend of the show, Pete Brown.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, maybe I'll go. Maybe I'll go out to historic BrewCon.
I'm surprised Pete didn't invite us or tell us about it when he was on the show.
Well, that's funny you should mention that.
Why?
I have a plus one. Well, had a plus one.
He gave you a plus, invited you and a plus one?
He said, here are two tickets. I assumed it was me plus one.
Okay. And
to BrewCon?
Who's going?
Historic BrewCon.
No way.
One of my boys is going.
Charlie?
No, Eric. Eric Caffrey.
Eric.
No, I don't really have tickets.
No, we don't. We're doing a bit.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, let's get to our next guest, who's been sitting here patiently. First-time guest. First-time long time.
Mm-hmm.
And
Self-proclaimed.
Mm-hmm. And we'll let him take it away, do a self-intro, as is the custom for first-time guests.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Am I close enough?
No.
Didn't feel like it.
There you go.
Yeah, you get to that. Yeah, it's perfect.
Hey, mm-hmm. Up a little. There you go.
Gosh, wow.
Cool. Okay, cool. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for having me. I'm Rob Brennan.
You're blowing it, man.
Yeah. Physically, like into here? Okay.
No.
My name is Rob Brennan. I'm the owner and brewer of Supermoon Beer Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Yeah. Nice. Thanks for coming on, man.
Glad to be here.
Yeah. We've known each other for quite a while.
Yeah. Old time, long
Penrose,
time.
Penrose, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Penrose is turning 10 this weekend.
Wow. Yeah.
I know. Yeah.
Crazy.
And also fellow UID head.
I will do my best to keep the references low for those of us.
Okay.
Then I'm gonna go sick. Yeah.
I will say
Mike's gonna be rolling his eyes.
The only other time I saw somebody
I gotta do it for a while.
you had an Instagram reel or story or something like that, and there was some music playing in the background, and I never noticed what the music is, and I just noticed that it was
Jogger,
and I was like, which is the UID. Forever ago, a side project, but not even side project, was a band that one of them was in. I mean, that is...
It's the theme song of the show you're listening to right now.
Is that band?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
For those who don't know.
Right.
Well, and you know that was an audience of one.
And right.
That was for you, and yes. You got it, so...
Yes, I got
mission
it.
Accomplished, yeah.
Yes. And I got it. I mentioned it to you. Yeah. So that it's funny. You could have also, Mike said earlier, it's like, guess what I saw? I saw somebody with a UID bumper sticker. And I said, that's me.
That's
the
beer
temple
man.
Yeah. It's the same thing. I did one time see a UID bumper sticker in the wild. And I was like racing
down.
Yes, trying to catch up with them. And it just wasn't going to happen.
Very unchill.
I also did. And it was a seatbelts bumper sticker. Which, to the untrained eye, looks like a seatbelt campaign.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's a very specific thing from a very specific podcast, and it was very anticlimactic when I tried to explain that to the person I was driving with.
Yeah. I tried to get Rob to come out to New York City to see UID with me, but it just didn't quite work out.
Listen to him, but yeah, it was great.
We're here to talk about beer, not about wonderful pieces of Americana, of American
culture.
Yeah. Important, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, peak American culture.
Yeah. So why don't you tell the folks about Supermoon just a little bit.
Yeah, we're a small family-owned brewery in the Bayview neighborhood of Milwaukee on the south side. We're really small. We're a team of five, and the brewery is fashioned out of what was our house. So it's a very unique kind of small-scale brewery focused mostly on oak barrel fermentation blending. And recently, in the last year and a half after we've opened a tap room, we've been doing a lot of stainless beer and clean beer, but rooted in Saison and farmhouse style beer. Had the pleasure of making a beer with Strong Mike two years ago.
Was that 2 years
ago? I think it was 2 years ago. And
where
share a very
time and space.
See, brought it way back around again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we share very similar philosophies and an approach to that style of beer, and mm-hmm. We've been open since 2020, but we've been really
it's a good
open
year to open. I hear.
Was that?
It's a good year to open.
Oh, so I wrote it into the business plan that way, and I was like, you know what I hope happens?
Wait for pandemic, then open.
Wuhan.
Yeah, I sold the first beers in November of 2020, excellent month, under a plexiglass barrier from inside the building.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was
a bummer.
It was wild.
Selling your first beers that way. That
you know
is,
what?
I mean, you do what you got to do.
It,
but
it actually wasn't. It was.
Oh, really?
After all the paranoia and anxiety and kind of like stress of getting there and kind of being like, oh, God, is this going to actually, you know, is there going to have liftoff? The people that showed up, that walked up to the front door to receive beer under a plexiglass shield like it was just some other ordinary day was remarkable. So, no, I was extremely encouraged by the actual launch of the brewery. And it also kind of gave us like a weird perspective of like, wow, you know, if it's working like this, imagine if we had like bathrooms or like a place to sit down and like drink the beer. Like if our proof of concept is this, then I think we'll be in a, you know, good
that's
shape
true.
When things level out. And that's kind of how it happened.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. Very much appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
Any beers that people have had lately that they've really enjoyed?
Yeah, I can I jump in on this one?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just talking to Niall before the show. I was up in his neck of the woods, Northern California, and the very first beer I drank after landing and kind of getting to where we were going was at this small English inn, like a bed and breakfast in Muir Beach, and it's called the Pelican Inn. And it's one of those places where you walk up to it and you look at it and you kind of don't feel like you are where you are. It felt like I was in the English countryside or something.
Oh, wow.
And was starving, had kind of taken the long winding road all the way to the beach and was hangry. Our kid was hungry. Everybody was dying. And my first beer was a Old Speckled Hen on Nitro.
Oh, yes.
Had it with a plate of fish and chips and an English dip, and it was remarkable.
Oh, good.
Fantastic.
That's great. That's awesome. Nice. Anyone else want to go? I can try to think. I did XPA last time, I believe.
Yeah, I tend to not do this, but it's one of my own beers. I've been busy. brewing and doing deliveries and such, so I haven't had time to have much else. But we made a collaboration with a new ramen spot called Akahoshi, and it's a saison that we finished on koji inoculated rice. So we put the rice in secondary fermentation, and it is very cool. It has this like big league chew bubblegum character and this nuttiness from the rice, and then it has this really specific like fermentation quality that I don't know how to describe yet.
Okay.
From the koji, and the koji actually helped to dry the beer out. Pretty much all of our stuff finishes at about zero anyway, but this definitely was the catalyst for getting it down to zero. It was very, very cool to use it. They specialize in miso ramen, so we wanted to do something that was like representative of what they do and not just be like, hey, let's make a beer that you can sell at your ramen shop. And so you need koji to make miso, and so we used koji to make the beer, and it came out honestly better than I expected, which is almost never the case with my own beers. I usually think they're much worse than I expect.
What can I jump in and ask? What you know, what kind of flavor profile did you get from the koji, and what do you feel like it influenced? How did it influence the fermentation? And I mean, just adding, I don't know how much.
So just adding the rice itself to secondary, I think added this like very rice derived nuttiness to it. But there's also this like, and I don't know how to describe it any more specifically than the Big League Chew bubblegum, this like dusty, like bubblegummy character. And then there's this textural
thing.
Is
that the bubblegum you pull from underneath the table and then chew on it? Yeah, is that what you mean?
No, it's like a, like in, the one that comes in the pouch. Yeah, the pouch.
I'm kidding.
But it is a powdered product.
Yeah. I use powdered Big League Chew to get that. And then there's
dried,
like
Big League Chewed. Yeah.
And there's also like a different thing going on texturally. There's like this firmness to the mouthfeel of the beer that we don't typically get that I am associating with the rice, just because it's the most obvious different thing that we did to it that could have caused this like firm full texture, but I'm not sure why it would have done that, but it's very cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
For me, we just put on a couple days ago Stiegl Paracelsus. It comes through a couple times a year. Mm-hmm. Used to come through just, I believe, once a year, and it was springtime. It was kind of this time, early spring. Yeah. And, man, when that beer is on, it's on.
It's
And it's been sitting around past couple years a little bit longer, and I think it loses a lot of the just kind of magic to it, but it's tasting great right now. So this is a call to arms for anyone who's out there, and if you have access to Paracelsus, it gets decent distribution. I don't know what the distro is outside of Chicago, but right now it's tasting really good. So drink the Paracelsus that you see, and I would say drink it within the next like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. It's going to change, and it's going to change. I don't know when, but
gradually over time.
Yeah. But some more gradually than others.
Yeah, less gradually for the Paracelsus, probably.
Yeah.
It might take me 2 weeks to find it, and then it's going to be going downhill.
Exactly.
Still try it. Do they still bring in unfiltered Pilsner or Kale? I haven't seen that in forever.
I don't think they're doing that anymore. I haven't seen it anymore.
That was when that was coming in like overnighted or like whatever the fastest.
Well, they had two versions of it. Yeah, like, they had the unfiltered stuff that they like would hurry up and get over here, and then they had like the air flown one that would come in less. And there was a difference between the two.
It's extremely small volumes of those things too.
Yeah, it would be like one keg would go here, one keg would go there. Yeah. I've only had, I think, one or two glasses of that stuff ever,
I remember,
and it's great.
Being, for some reason, they invited Pipeworks to, like, the 10th and Blake, like, tap room downtown for some, like...
10th and Blake is the...
It's Miller Coors's, like, high-end division, and they have, like, this,
headquarters, like
corporate
headquarters.
Yeah, their headquarters. Yeah. And they have a bar, and they had, like, 3 day old unfiltered Pilsner Kale, and it was
you got to have as much as you wanted.
We drank a lot of it. There was don't you want to try any of our other stuff? And we're like, hell no. We did not get invited back.
That bar is something to see, though. That is a very, very cool thing to see, and the views are incredible.
Yeah,
it's
and they had unfiltered Pilsner Kale.
Yeah,
drank like 4 or 5 of them.
Yeah, why not? No, it's a special beer. To me, it the one time I had it, it reminded me of, in a weird way, it reminded me of like Sierra Nevada Pale Ale,
it's
which is
so
crazy.
Hoppy.
Yeah, it's so bitter and so hoppy.
Yeah,
it was,
and there's very little diastole.
Striking.
On it.
I didn't notice any.
I'm pretty insensitive
to
it, so I don't really know. But I remember people remarking about it.
Yeah, it was great. I drank it. I was like, oh, this is why people like this beer. Mm-hmm. It's usually just destroyed by diacetyl. In my mind, other people like it.
For a long time, I feel like that, without knowing it, was probably the hoppiest beer general consumers were drinking.
Yeah.
You know, for like a really long time.
Yeah. Good point.
Thanks. Cool. All right. Any other beers that people have had lately? Or should we move on?
Did Niall tell us about beer?
I don't know. He doesn't have.
Yeah, I don't know. I've had a few here and there. I'm always a friend of mine bought a little liquor store in Calistoga, the town I live in, the northern part of Napa Valley, this little funky town we live in. And I'm always trying to get him to bring in beers, and somehow or another he got a case of Pivo pills, and he's like, well, I got a six pack, and then the next day it was all gone. I'm like, what are you doing? Why didn't you get more? You know, you only got a case.
Yeah, that's only four. And, that's only four units, man.
I'm like, dude, you gotta change this up. Get rid of that Budweiser and put Pivo in its place.
But that's a good sign that it sold. That you came in and it was gone. I mean, that's great. You know, that means that next time it's around, we'll buy three cases of it. And
let's hope.
That's great.
Yeah. No, that's the thing, is trying to get people to, you know, it's hard because if you're not he's more of a wine guy. So he does their whole wine program. He's like, just tell me what to get, Niall. And it's like, I've tried to connect him with certain, you know, companies and distributors and things, but he's moon. Yeah,
like the most esoteric stuff, like just like
mad fruits is
and scratch. Got to get scratch in there.
Yeah. Also, that would be cool. I don't think they're in distro. They might be with lime, but I don't think
maybe.
Maybe if you reach out to them and ask, well, they'd probably say no anyway. They say no to a lot of people, I think.
Yeah. No, they actually were. I got a keg of scratch for our fifth-year anniversary party.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's cool.
They were super cool. And that worked out great. Now, of course, everyone keeps asking, what's your 10-year anniversary party going to happen? When's that going to happen? I'm like, oh, my God, I can't even. I'm just trying to keep the brewery going straightforward, right. You know, and then trying to put on these parties.
Five-year and one-day party, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Come to our pickup party. Become a member. But, yeah, no, I love the Pivo Pills. Is a great just crusher, and it was fun tasting it against kind of the way our beer is made. And you were doing that whole Pivo presentation recently. I think, was that on, like, a Instagram Live, or what was that? Instagram?
What was I doing?
Did you do a Pivo or a
Tipo?
Kind of a Pilsner tasting? I guess I'm
off on that. Oh, Tipo Pill? Tipo Pills?
Yeah.
Tipo. Are you talking about Pivo or Tipo?
Well, Pivo, but
yes, Tipo. Yes, which is what it was based on. Yeah, we did that recently. That was fun, and I mean the whole Italian Pilsner thing. I think it is kind of is that the newest? Well, no, that's like one of the newest. Like. Yeah, but that's not new. That's a style that's coming, like becoming. It has been a thing, right, to some degree, but Italian Pils is legitimately a new
conjured out of nowhere.
You're being
rude to Milkshake IPA, Chris.
That was conjured out of nowhere.
Well, the Milkshake Pilsners haven't come yet, so you haven't seen that yet.
Milkshake Mild is what we're.
That's the first time I'm hearing that one.
Milkshake, yeah. Well, I want to do an oatmeal mild.
We're reimagining these styles a little bit as brewers too, and as we take maybe these classic, you know, Bohemian Pilsners, and then layering in some of this modern, you know, our local hops that we have, or U.S. grown Tetnegg or U.S. grown noble hops, and layering them in. I mean, I think it's a reimagination of, and maybe a coalescing of styles, like higher bittering units, you know, 40 plus IBUs, snappy, dry, clean, crisp, cool fermentation, malt driven, full malt, you know, grain bill, And these are just wonderful beers. I mean, and then if you add some biotransformation, you add some hop lift to the nose to play with the malt. It's just a great landscape. It's beautiful. Makes a great beer.
Well, with that, let's get into some topics. This is one that I just kind of added based off of last week when I found out, while we were recording, that those Untappd awards that I've been seeing are local.
They're state-based, right?
Or whatever. Yeah, I don't know how.
State and country.
State and country. Yeah.
Depends how you search, I guess.
So I was thinking about it more, and, you know, we love to poke fun at Untappd and, you know, awards and all that sort of stuff. I know that a lot of them are, you know, there's a lot of, like, top tens and stuff like that that are kind of bogus. And I wanted to talk about it because I kind of surprised myself by thinking, I don't hate that. I don't hate that it's like, oh, it's just this local thing. And I don't, I guess I'm, it, well, we can get into it, that it doesn't, I guess, call out that it, how localized it is. It just says best. I mean,
it says, when you look at those awards, if someone pulled it actually from Untappd, it does say it's Illinois or whatever state you're talking about. It's not like big, it actually is in bold letters. It's not the biggest thing on the page.
The medals are awarded, number one gold medal in Wisconsin or whatever.
Yeah.
Illinois by style.
Yeah, so it's like, here's one I'm looking at, like Community Awards winner 2023. So like, this is what I've noticed it's saying. It just says like Untappd Community Awards winner 2023. Here he goes. Number one mead, I guess, in, I'm just looking at one. I just literally did a Google search for it, but yeah, I guess you can say, oh, I see, United States, Maine, United States. Okay, so it can kind of get kind of more granular. Mm-hmm. But to the way I think maybe I saw it was they were telling you where it was from, not that it was the best in that area.
Gotcha.
So I'll say
maybe
this.
Maybe so that was intentional?
Yeah. Like, I guess probably you guys would be more tuned into that than most people, I would think.
It took me a long time to figure it out, to be honest.
Okay.
When I saw it, I'm like, first I was, damn, Goldfinger won a lot of these awards. Was the first thing I thought, because hey, like someone posted they won like every single lager award. And then I'm like, wow. And then I saw all these people posting it for the next few days, and I'm like, what is going on here? And then I had to look it up. I'm like, oh, it's every style of beer, first, second, and every sub style, first, second, and third for every state in the country and every country in the world.
Right. And so it's like, a ton. Okay.
So it's a lot of awards.
It started,
still cool to win.
I don't hate it. I think that maybe it's what were you gonna say,
Rob?
It's
not meaningful.
Oh, it started to feel, I also found out by way of other breweries posting about them, and I'm like, oh, that's really cool. You know, good for them. And
that's what I thought.
And I got an email I thought was junk that said that one of our beers won. And I was like, oh, which one? And I went in to check, and we had won 9 of the best beers in the state, which felt like a lot. And then as you start to see, there was like a week where you would see in almost real time breweries figuring out that they were like, oh shit, we won a couple of these too. That's cool.
Their spam folder.
Yeah. And then everybody kind of, they give you a placard to download. So it's very easy to share. It started to feel like two things for me. It started to feel a little bit like everybody wins something award.
Uh-huh.
And it also,
unless
started,
you're in like California, like Nile,
well, we did not win anything.
I mean, Nile. I mean, in California, you're. It's like that's.
Well, it starts to become extremely scale based and
yeah.
But at the end of the day, for that exact
I'm
reason,
I'm looking right now, and I'm like seeing. I'm looking. I'm not even going to try and find myself. But yeah, you can see the main protagonist here.
Yeah, that's what I guess. My second point was, it started to feel, with the amount of sharing and the breadth of categories to share, that this was the winner of the day was Untappd.
Yeah.
It was very much a let's get 10,000 breweries to signal boost Untappd with unified, uniform, branded assets.
Yeah.
And we all did it. I mean, I did it. Winning stuff is fun.
It's the best. Winning stuff is great.
Winning stuff's great.
Yeah.
Especially if, I don't know, we're, like I said, like a very small brewery, and that sort of a signal boost is not something I paid attention to on a daily basis. But to round it all up in once and be like, you know, we're a brewery in a niche, first and foremost. We have a focused sort of philosophy and niche. And so to get the validation of public input to validate that as a proof of concept, to say like, you know, we're like a saison and farmhouse brewer, and it's like, well, great, because we make the best saison in the state by their judgment.
You beat out Spotted Cow.
Well, that's precisely the other point. Why in the hell are we being compared to Nuclearis? Like, it's ridiculous. But nonetheless, really nice to throw a gold medal on something. And
congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah. It's interesting. I'm just kind of like scrolling through the Illinois ones, and it's
I would say that all the data, that we're looking at is generated by tickers. And so tickers on, Untapped, folks that want to use the app. And it looks like between 50 and 90 ratings are what you need to get before you get a rating. Even if your bottle caps are kind of in a three-ish zone, mid 3.5, 3.6 zone, depending on the style. just to kind of break it down, it just depends on exposure. So if your brewery has enough exposure, or it's in enough tap rooms, or if you have a large tap room with a pretty big audience, so you're going to see a little bit more exposure to those tickers. So sorry, guys.
Surprise, surprise, they sweep the historical beer/brew it ancient herb category.
The most highly contested category.
As I'm going through here.
They swept the from Aaron's land.
I'm curious category. Who came in fourth.
Yeah.
Like
Scratch did.
Probably.
Scratch came in first through 100th for that category.
Yeah.
There were I was looking at things. I'm like, oh, did we get anything in this? And we didn't get anything. And I'm like, we had higher scores than some of these, and we had more check-ins. I don't know how they're grading this.
Well, the style pool in and of itself is kind of a fascinating deep dive. A friend of mine in Milwaukee has a very small, mostly like 99% spontaneous brewing and blending operation. And his beer, it's a phenomenal beer I've had on draft at our tap room, actually, but in the Sati category, took bronze in the country, and it is an excellent beer, but I also am like, how many Satis are out there?
More than three. So
yeah,
that's good.
Interesting.
So Pliny the Elder, California, double IPA, 4.483, Pliny for President, 4.475, and then Monkish with the bronze. I think this is also, these are all the check-ins for 2023. So it's not other years. So that's, I think that's how they're kind of pooling this data.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
I think that to that point too, as the inaugural year goes, it does have me thinking about the data and the input and the information that you put into Untappd information. I mean, that's, again, on a daily basis, I'm not tuned in, but I'm the one who adds those things and kind of loads them up into the internet. And it does make you think about, like, what you're putting in,
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think you're right, though, that the big winner is
100%. Yeah,
I hadn't thought about that, but yes,
I wonder what effect this has on like the kind of more general beer consumer that's like into craft beer and follows craft breweries on Instagram, but isn't like analyzing it. Like, oh well, it's just like it's like every state in every category. It's like probably meaningful to people like that.
I think it took you a little while to figure it out. It took me a little while
because I follow so many breweries on Instagram too. Right. That's probably the reason where I was like, this isn't as cool as I thought it was when I first saw it. It's still cool. Like,
if I hadn't talked to you, I wouldn't have figured it out. I mean, you're the one who told me. I didn't figure it out. You told me. So I would have been like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, the first one I saw was Goldfinger, and I'm like, oh, I believe that they got gold, silver, and bronze in all of these categories for the country. That beer rocks. But then when you see other ones being like, oh, we got silver for our, and like, there was one where I was like, wait, what's going on? It was a brewery that doesn't even exist anymore, posting that they closed, but they still post that they got second place in some sort of like wit beer or something. And I'm like, wait, what is happening right now?
That is the interesting kind of magic trick that I think this whole thing is pulled, which is, and I have an extremely complicated relationship with the idea of Untappd. Fundamentally, I think it's very flawed. However, I think they did a good job in executing this campaign to give themselves some legitimacy as as a ranking platform, as a competition platform. Like the idea of awarding gold, silver, and bronze, you know, it comes off the same way that most competitions do. It's you know, it's like a
and they're. Used to be like the Rate Beer Awards, right? Where there was a physical award show where you would go and get silly little medals, but like that doesn't exist anymore. There isn't there isn't something like this that is like review based. Like there's, you know, GABF, which is, you know, there's like blind tasting things, but they're, I mean, the Rate Beer Awards used to be super meaningful to me.
Pipeworks won a ton of them. Do you remember, did they package up like assets for you to say, hey, brewery ABC, no. You guys won, no, share these
way,
on here.
Way before that was even a thing. It was just like...
Because that's why I thought it was...
You didn't even get an email. You just found out by like knowing when they came out and clicking through and seeing. At a certain point, maybe they did, but I wasn't paying attention.
They made it really easy to just be like, here's the things.
Yeah, yeah.
They look great. They fit.
Mm-hmm.
Show them.
They're formatted, yeah.
Totally.
Much more savvy. Like, social media wasn't nearly as like perfected when Pipeworks was winning those things as it is now.
I thought that it was, you know what? I think the fact that it is localized, in a way I almost like it more that it is like that. Now there's downsides in some ways, like, oh, everybody wins. But at the same time, it's like, but those are the beers that you're going to have, like you're going to interact with. And it's like, and it's also in a weird way, that's what your community voted for.
In a way, it's much more reflective of how people now think about and consume beer than something like GABF even is, which is objectively probably a better system for rating what the beer actually tastes like. But this is a much more representative of like how people consume beer.
The other thing, too, is, you know, mentally, with our scale, and scale meaning like in the brewery, it's pretty much just me, you know, most days. Mike, I think you can relate. When you're making decisions for better or worse, it's coming from like a one person perspective, and you're ideating by yourself, and you're kind of like, you know, there isn't a ton of feedback mechanism.
I'm the same with Niall too. You know. It's like usually just you, right, Niall?
No, I have a assistant brewer who I've been training. Actually, I kind of ran him through the winery for an internship here, and got him kind of used to hooking up hoses and
all right. So you're big time. All right, you can never mind.
You've got one guy. This doesn't hold.
I got a guy.
Five people in this brewery. I have three.
Whoa.
And production is and sales. You know, we're kind of so. I do have someone to bounce things off of, but
well, that's a lot.
You know, obviously, it's a different. You know, you know, I find myself hearing what. My assistant says, and being like, okay, well, there's what he thinks, which is important to consider.
Wrong.
And then there's also kind of what I think,
which
based
is
on the history of what we've done. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of, and this particularly is the conversation that we have for our membership beers, which are our most core high.
Oh,
we lost them for a moment.
So it's like, you don't want to screw that up. So that's like, does this represent Mad Fritz, and is this the best we've made of this style, or, you know, in our interpretive, you know, landscape? So, yeah, I mean, I think you're right, Rob. I mean, being when you're by yourself and it's difficult.
Well, it's difficult because at the end of the day, you're kind of using what you have, which is mostly just your subjective opinion. And when you put a beer out in the world,
what's gonna work.
Yeah, and I trust that most days of the week, but on a bad one, you know, you feel it's complicated. And so when something like this with actual numerical data that's driven by the people drinking your beer comes back, to tell you like, yes, like, so we put a beer out there. I'm like, yeah, I think this is a pretty damn good beer, else I probably wouldn't sell it. It's validating when user, you know, data is saying, yes, we also think this is a good beer. And I'll tell you the other thing, like, we opened in the armpit of the pandemic, and there wasn't a tap room. And so the only way I was able to kind of understand the experience of what people were going through when they were popping a cap of our beer and tasting it was through Untappd mostly. Like, there wasn't a mechanism like you'd have that social interaction over the bar to be like, hey, let me pour you this or let me sample this and what do you like and what do you don't like. It's Untappd was the thing, was kind of the conversation, unfortunately, at that point in time. So for better or worse,
I learned pretty quickly to turn the app off and or even delete it because I got disappointed with how people interpreted, you know, the artistic expression of our product. And so it can go the other way too, where you literally are like, well, why am I doing this? You know, people don't get it.
And
a lot of people don't get what we're doing, and that's okay. And that, I think that that's part of just all.
Cut out again.
Mm-hmm. Or not. I mean, I think it's great to open up these metrics to the masses, but and inevitably, this is a great way to consolidate those metrics and offer it to their consumers that are using it. And I think it's a brilliant move on the apps or on the developers and the folks that own it and run it. But I mean, for folks like us that don't have a lot of presence out there, you know, it's kind of like we've joked around, or you guys have joked around, obviously, quite a bit on the show about being like the best beer I ever had, 3.5 bottle caps, the best representation, you know, and you're like, huh, can't you get to 5? Can't you just say like it's a solid 5? But then when it comes to wine, like the whole wine world is like, people talk about, well, I'm a winemaker, I made 100 points for this wine, or I got 100 points, and it's bullshit. You know, there is nothing is perfect. Nothing should get 100 points. And so, and this is,
that sounds like sour grapes to me.
No, it's 100 points. Chris. Sour grapes. Yeah. Can't be sour grapes at 100 points.
I didn't get 100 points scoring, but that's okay. I'm okay with it, but I just think that it shouldn't actually exist.
No, it's
BS. But similarly, on the other side of it is the facelessness of it also gives at its best a good chuckle. Like, you know, mm-hmm. we make pretty decidedly funky beer, intentionally funky beer, and I'm a fan of the low intervention approach and taking it across the finish line that way to present as such. But on a good day, you read something that somebody would never say to you in public, i.e. yesterday someone commented one of our beers, I think it was just a one word response, half a bottle cap, manure.
Nice.
And I'm like, yeah, it was. And I was like, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
That's when you delete the app from the phone and you're like, okay, I'm not going to open this for a while.
Well, I was having a good day, so I kind of rolled with it. But on a bad day, that is a total bummer sometimes. All right.
Yeah, ours always tend to be in the ones where they're in flights where it's hazy IPA, hazy IPA, sure. Hazy IPA, R0 Play-Doh finishing 3.2%.
So we're going to play a quick little game, and then we'll move on from this conversation. Okay. Here's the game. I've been looking at it while you guys are talking, so I'll moderate.
You're an expert.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I want you to
hit the music surge for the.
Yeah. No. I want you guys each to pick a brewery that you think has won the most community awards. And before you think about it, just remember the state that they're in matters a lot.
Okay.
So let's see who can pick a brewery that has won the most community awards. Call them out.
Russian River.
See, I think California is, I think that's going to be tough to do because there's so many breweries.
You don't have a list of like the number of people, number of awards each brewery has won. We're just going to say them and then you tell us.
I'll look it up and see who won, how many they won.
Monkish, Russian River.
I think Russian River is going to be, okay. So it looks like
You got to find a brewery that either does a bazillion styles or focuses on a specific thing like lager, and then they have to be in a place that doesn't
in a
have,
small state
doesn't have other breweries focusing.
So Russian River won 8.
Afterthought only, just crushes only Untappd. Eight. They're right. Making amazing beers, and we're over here making our silly little beers.
Okay,
what are we gonna do?
So who's
side project?
I think I already looked them up. I think they won 18.
Solid number of things. Yeah.
My pick, the first one I picked was Hill Farmstead because they're in Vermont.
That's a lot of Vermont.
They won 54.
Jesus.
But I found one that won more, so that they're not the winner.
Post all that on Instagram. Was it like 10 frames?
Right. I don't know.
Well, Trillium and Treehouse are in the same state, so that kind of cannibalizes.
Yeah, that cannibalizes it. Right.
There's another hype brewery. Oh, what about Arizona half. Wilderness?
Arizona Wilderness. Okay, let me look up Arizona Wilderness. Let's look.
I don't know the Arizona brewing scene very well.
But. Whoops. They won 33. Okay. So that's quite a lot.
It's not as many as Hope Farmstead, but
no. But there is a brewery that I found.
Toppling Goliath.
Oh, that's a great. That's a great
there's
one.
Pulpit Rock, and there's all the other spinoffs of that one in Iowa.
So let's look. All right, one
Drecker. What about Drecker?
Where are they based out of?
They're like one of the Dakotas, maybe.
Toppling Goliath won 19. Drecker, if you don't know the state, I can't look it up. Well, Dogfish Head.
Yeah, wherever Cheesecake Dogfish Head come from.
55. They won.
So that's
one
Mike's point.
Oh, Delaware. Like,
Delaware.
North Dakota. Drecker's in Fargo, North Dakota.
This will be the last one we look up because we can't just keep doing this. So Drecker in North Dakota. There's no way they won more than 55. I mean, although North Dakota, they won 45.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
every hazy cheesecake style sour ale, they're taking it.
Right. So
45's pretty good.
45's pretty good. 54 for Hill Farm, 55 for Dogfish Head. You know, if you want to win these things, just move.
Move to Delaware.
Or Rhode Island. Or, you know, Idaho.
Oh, man,
or
I can't even think of a brewery in Rhode Island. Newport Brewing. They've been around forever.
There you go. So open up one and just win every single
Connecticut.
One. So, yeah.
Fat Orange Cat.
Yeah. It's interesting. Keep an eye on these community award things. Why don't we, can we take like a 5-minute break and freshen our drinks and then come back and, finish this thing out?
Sure.
Awesome. We'll come back. We actually have a lot more to potentially discuss, but we're not doing a 2-hour show. I'm calling it right now. I refuse.
All right.
But we'll be back. Well, we have plenty still to talk about when we come back with the Beer Temple Insiders Roundtable. Oh. And we're back with the Beer Temple Insiders Roundtable. I am Chris Quinn, one of your hosts. Your other host is Mike Schillau. He is shopping for merch at the Mad Fritz website. We are with Niall Zachary of Mad Fritz and Rob Brennan of Supermoon.
These are incredible.
Yeah, and we were just talking about merch and the merch game and how some people...
Merch!
And there's like a million different ways to do it. It is funny. Because some people can phone it in and sell a gazillion. Like, I would imagine somebody like Cantillon, it's just literally...
Just like a Loons shirt?
They would yeah, sell just like Loons. I mean, the main one they do is just their logo on a shirt. You can only buy it there, though.
Yeah.
And they just, like, everybody buys that shirt.
I spent so much money on merch there. I bought a stupid pitcher.
Really?
Or a lambic pitcher.
Nice.
Right.
Why do I need a $100 lambic pitcher? I haven't used it once.
I mean, Hill Farmstead is, I don't want to say like phoning it in, but it's like, it's their
logo.
Can't
break it if you don't use it.
It's on the shirt, and everyone buys the shirt.
Flowers in it. Come on.
But then there's other people who like have a lot of like, art. Like Mars's merch game is
strong.
Maybe the strongest, if you ask me.
I think Half Acre's up there, man. Some of that stuff is super, super sharp.
Yep, there's a super cool, too.
Well-considered, well-designed.
I would put Mars, personally, slightly ahead. You got to go down there and see. It's just, they have so much crazy different things with so many artists making so much stuff. It's really cool.
The challenge with merch for a brewery, you know, that's operating is that you have to take a certain amount of cash and just bury it in merch. And then you sit on a certain amount of inventory and depending on your outreach, like we talked about and how you really sit and whatnot. I mean, I think that plays a large role in what you can and can't do and your exposure or whatnot. But
and who it's managed by.
You know, for smaller breweries, it's a hard nut to crack.
Yeah, totally. I mean, for us, we've just have our logo. We've done some other crazier stuff
lately. Were you talking about Pogs?
Yeah, Pogs.
Yeah, cool.
They're good. They're cool. Pogs.
Passion fruit, orange juice, and guava?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, Pog.
Pog, a Pog beer. Yeah. That's the new. Did you win for Illinois best Pog? Yeah.
Yeah, you know we did.
So
Mick Klug Farms passion fruit orange yes. and guava blend.
Was it a fig Pog?
A fig Pog, yeah.
Oh, no, a fib Pog.
Fib
Pog.
Oh, yeah.
We are fib Pogs. Okay, this is getting out of hand.
Do we want to talk about
an SFW?
What should we talk about next? Should we do? We can do that. We can do UK breweries. We can do letters. We can do some comings and goings. Mike, why don't you pick what you want to talk about next?
Let's talk about Monster Energy.
Oh, okay.
Laying off.
Talk about it. 12. Introduce.
They laid off 12 employees, which was a good chunk of the staff left at Cigar City in the last 2 weeks. And then in February, they laid off Wayne Wambles, who's like kind of a, despite his like Looney Tunes sounding name, is like a very like prominent person in craft beer lore. Like he made Hunapu and Highline and all that, like made that brewery what it is. He was
and laid him off.
And they laid him off in February. He was living in North Carolina, so I wonder what his actual like. And apparently, when they contacted him, he's just like, "Yeah, I got laid off in February." That's like kind of all he said.
Brevard is in North Carolina, where they're brewing all this beer.
Oh, that's right.
And that's true.
They're brewing a lot of it in Asheville, so they're closing it down.
Also, really good mountain biking there too. By the way,
yeah, nice. They're shutting it down as like shutting down Cigar City as some sort of like production facility. It's turning into an R&D facility, which they're
the one in Tampa.
Yeah.
Like,
The Cigar City, which they're claiming will still be R&D for beers. Like it's not like they're going to be making like
alcohol
energy drinks or something like that. Like they're claiming it's like now the, you know, Oscar Blues and Cigar City innovation station, our favorite word, innovation.
Mm-hmm.
But it did require like means they 12 people lost their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what like I don't know. Part of what I love about craft beer is the local economic stimulation of a lot of these businesses existing and being very local in who they employ and where they and the economics of them. Right? We send our beer basically to Chicago and the surrounding suburbs and a little bit to like other countries, but that's just more for fun. And that all of our economic impact is in my local area, and that mm-hmm. means a lot to me. So 12 people lost their jobs because of this multinational company being like, this is inefficient to do it here, which to me stinks.
Well, do you think that other people gain jobs in other places?
No.
Because of, okay.
No, definitely don't. They just folded it into their other operations. They didn't hire 12 more people in North Carolina.
Sure, sure.
Do you think this is anticipated, though, with, like, the buyout? Like,
totally.
It is? I mean, and also, this is a continuation of what you guys have been talking about for a while. It's the consolidation of brand identities within, you know, producers of beer, you know? So folks that can actually, you know, consolidate these product lines and then distribute them to, you know, the regional areas where they have the most market share. And so why do they need a brewery that costs all this overhead?
Right. Yeah. And like part of it's like, not that there's any like celebrity brewers really, but like someone like that who was very formative in the come up of craft beer and made some very, not groundbreaking, but like foundational beers, like Hunapu was a foundational beer of craft beer in the early, you know, 2010s, Highline, that they felt the lack of need for someone like that as like the head of the spearhead of what the innovation was going to
be. Highline was a big deal back in the day.
But like they're turning the facility that he did all that at is they're turning into a quote unquote innovation and R&D facility, and yet the person who did all of that innovating and led that, they let go. So
sure.
It just also marks like a different, not this is new, but clearly more of a sales-driven idea of innovation than like an individual's creativity or something like that.
Presumably,
I mean, definitely, right? Like
sales-driven.
You would think so.
Sales-driven, but based on a strategic dissolving of sales?
It's going to be an innovation for their whole cluster, which is, I forget what else is in it, but it's Oscar Blues, it's Cigar City, it's Monster Energy, obviously. But what else is in Fireman Capital or Canarchy before that? There was other Perrin, I think.
But it's not Fireman. So Fireman Capital is now a subsidiary of Monster Energy, right?
Right. So it was Canarchy, then it was Fireman Capital, and then that got bought by Monster Energy.
Yeah.
I guess my question starts to become innovation of what and who is doing it,
How to make more money.
Right.
If there's no one left, I mean, who's going to innovate?
That's the question, right?
Shell the brewery and keep the tap room. Well, I mean, it's, looks and smells like, hey, we got to just drop some, overhead here.
Right.
And let's kind of figure out where this year's going.
Not to discredit the 12, but the lumping Wayne Wambles in with the 12 doesn't make strategic sense if you're talking about doing this in the interest of innovation. Well,
they fired Wayne in February, before they fired these 12 people. So it was one of those things of they've been phasing out. Mm-hmm. They've been phasing out the idea of Cigar City as a brand that's going to do anything different in the future. So I think it's one of those things where we have High Lie, and basically we have High Lie, and we're just going to put that everywhere we can put it, and we don't need anything else from Cigar City now in this portfolio.
They should just hire Surge to phase out. Oh, fade out or phase out?
He'll do both.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. If he could do that for the beer really industry, talented. That'd be great.
Yeah. No, we need him to fade.
You don't want
in.
Him to fade out. You don't want him to fade out the beer industry. Because believe me, you ask for it, he'll do it. So careful what you wish for.
Chris and
what
I.
What does he prefer, fade in or fade out? Overall.
Surge, I don't think it matters.
Not if you're a fade in guy. Shake your head if you're a fade out guy.
I mean, he's
going in a circle. He's moving his head in a circle.
As long as he's fading, he does not care.
Yeah.
In, out,
doesn't left,
matter. Because if you think about it, when you're fading something out, you're fading something else in.
That's true. Is that? Yeah, silence. Yeah.
Fading in the silence,
You're optimistic.
So,
incredible.
You and I have, Chris, you and I have talked at length on this show about our skepticism and cynicism towards the usage of the
life.
yeah. The usage of the word innovation, right?
Yes.
And how we've even had friendship changing conversations about if things are technically innovative. And our intuition is that innovation used to be used as people getting into a room and thinking about something and thinking there's a way forward and going to pursue that. And now the way that innovation is getting used is that it's how do we squeeze more out of this thing? And how do we now take these brands we have? And what if we put Guava and High Lie is what I'm assuming they're going to do with this innovation brewery, rather than someone being what would be cool is if we put all these spices in this stout. No one's doing that. And I don't know how it's going to sell, or what if we made this brown ale that no one knows if we want to make a cigar-based brown ale, but
it's the most overused word.
Yeah, I think both of those. I have slight pushbacks on both of your uses of innovation. I think they're both going for the same thing. I don't think throwing spaghetti at the wall is necessarily innovative either.
That wasn't what I was saying.
No, I know, but. What I'm saying is just trying something to try something. So what if we put cinnamon and chocolate and some chili in this stout? It's all about the context. I think that would make something really interesting. I love these flavors. That to me is innovation versus we're going to put in guava in it this week, we're going to put this in it that week, we're going to put this in it. It's you could literally come up with the same recipe.
That's
but it's
iteration.
Iteration, right. And to be fair, I guess that's the problem with innovation is it truly is both. And in the conversation we had with Doug, we were both right, because guess what? I mean, I'm sure the first time that a craft brewery All Day or something like that from Founders went into a 12-pack or a 15-pack then quickly thereafter and got into that door, that glass door in the refrigerator that had always been stalwart macro beers. And now that was like a stronghold. Like they no craft beer ever touched that door. And when I say door, I mean like when you go into like a 7-Eleven or something, you have the beer, and there's the one door that has all the big multi-packs and stuff like that. Like, in a way, that was innovative to break into that.
Yeah,
you know,
and that's a macro sense of innovation, right?
Yeah.
But then when you think about a single brewery being like, well, we're going to put this in 24-ounce cans, and then we're going to be able to get it into C-stores. Like, it's innovative for that brewery,
sure,
but it's not innovative for craft beer as a whole.
Well, I think for founders, it was probably both, right?
Yes, right, when you're the first person to do any of that. Yeah, it's for both.
This is so it can be both.
It's entirely scale-dependent, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, what you're saying is depends on the brewery, because, you know, innovation for a lot of breweries and on a 10-barrel system are iterative. Innovation for them is putting something wackadoo in a beer and releasing that beer. So there's no trials, there's no data coming back, there's no testing, there's no QC QA. It's putting it in and pushing it out, mm-hmm. and that is filed under the label of innovation for most small breweries, mm-hmm. out there. Being innovative is not the same as innovation, and I doubt that they're even the same thing in a lot of those conversations.
And like going back to the 12 people losing their job, and you know, a lot when other breweries, or I think we had even you said that on Ballast Point's company, like they closed their flagship location.
That was a kind of a joke though, because it's Kings and Convicts.
Kings and Convicts
closed their facility here, but like
probably way more than 12 people lost their job though. I mean, I almost guarantee more than 12 people. I mean, you have if you have front of house, if you have a big front of house, you could easily have 50
room,
people.
They don't have like a kitchen stuff.
Oh, they don't? Okay.
No, it's not a big brewery. Either.
Okay.
That could have been 5 people.
Well, it could have been 12. It easily could have been 12. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, jobs at that scale, you know, that stuff like that is terrible, and it does happen. Also, it's there's a few things in hindsight that I look at. There's a regular here who said, listened to the show and said, I'm going to start from episode 1 and work my way up. And he's at episode 79 now.
Oh, boy.
I talked to him today.
I met someone else who did this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jack.
What's up, Jack?
And it's very interesting. Pardon me as I burp into the microphone. Him like just talking like what we were talking about at the time, and he's like, you're all about Grunion, Chris, and you're talking about this and that, and people are Grunion from Ballast Point. He was like, you're talking about how bulletproof it was, how it aged so well, but it's interesting how also, like, you know, there were all these buyouts happening, and he's listening to them happening one at a time,
mm-hmm.
and you know, the one who got shit on by far the most, which even happened before this show ever started, was Goose Island.
Mm.
And in hindsight,
they were the first.
Have there been a lot of layoffs at Goose Island? Now, they've changed what they do. Like, most of the beer does not get made in Chicago anymore. And I think
a lot of the
beers are shells of what they used to be.
They're unrecognizable.
The
beers are bad.
The IPA and...
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that, like, some of the other ones are... I mean, some of the other ones have kind of stayed somewhat
The flagship beers are...
Yeah. So...
Bad.
My point being, there haven't been, that I know, like, big layoffs, and that's been for a long time. They've managed to kind of keep that thing going. I hope it stays that way. You know, Monster Energy, who would have thought... Who would have thought that, you know...
I mean...
They knew that. Everybody knew that when you get bought by Monster Energy, that... I mean, say what you will about Anheuser-Busch or AB InBev. I mean... At least there's an ethos, dude. You know?
Their CEO doesn't wear a Cookie Monster flat brim, right?
Right.
The CEO of Monster Energy has to wear a Cookie Monster flat brim.
Yeah, I mean, at least it's an ethos. It's a brewery. Yeah, please do.
That's a tough contrast to make, because back then, being one of the first that got acquired, like Goose Island, they had a lot of brand equity. One, number two, they had a diverse portfolio that could be kind of exploited and expanded upon, utilizing the infrastructure of Anheuser-Busch. And I mean, it just, yeah, maybe there were layoffs you didn't hear about, but in general, I mean, they utilized the infrastructure and just kept ratcheting it up because the, you know, the psych, the craft beer rise was still on, it was still on the rise back then. So it was a hard thing to grapple with when you guys were talking, when we were all seeing this going on. It was just like, they were trying to elbow their way into the business, and that was their first, you know, that was the first tick, right?
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Well, they were
sure.
always big. I mean, that's the difference between like the trajectory of something that came out of the scene, like after, you know, 2012 even, is if you started a brewery before that, you were usually like pretty big out of the gate, and kind of needed to be, and we're playing a volume game. And I mean, like Goose Island, I don't even know the last time they were considered like even small. And I know, I know that, you know, subjectively, just because I remember one of my first beer memories of all time was watching the 1996 Bulls playoff run in the backyard and people bringing Honker's Ale to like a backyard party.
Mm-hmm.
That means they weren't going to some specialty shop to buy it.
Right.
They were probably buying it at like a liquor store or 7-Eleven or something. And to be that big then means you were always, you always had a slice of the pie.
Right.
There, it's just
but
like
that's within your, you know, demographic, you know, geographic zone. I mean, what you guys think of big is nothing. I mean, you got to think of this nationally and then internationally. InBev is, you know, this is a totally different animal. I mean, sorry.
You're right.
It's you know, you cannot, they look at this in a whole nother ball game.
Similarly, like the innovation batches, if you want to call them that, of what's probably getting turned on that innovation brew house, if you can also call it that, at a place like Cigar City is, what is that, beer 50 we make barrels?
I want to get back to what Niall said. I mean, I hear you. I do think that they are, I mean, they make, I think, globally close to like half of all the beer that's getting made right now or something atrocious. But I will say locally, the people who work at Goose Island, you know, I mean, the jobs, when people leave those jobs at Goose Island, they're getting like backfilled with other jobs. And who knows if that's going to change. I mean, beer's not in the best place right now. But, you know, Monster Energy's a big brand. They're a big company, too. Maybe they're not ABI InBev, but they're a huge company also.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, and there's a lot of others that have kind of done it, you know, like who have bought Kirin and Heineken and Asahi and Duvel Mortgat. And, you know, these are all big brewing concerns. Now they pale in comparison to ABI InBev. All of them do. But, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, a lot. We should do a show where we look at some of these buyouts and see like what the parent company has done with the brewery since then. You know,
sure.
Can I jump in here real quick and just?
You don't have to keep asking. Just jump in real quick.
Okay. All right. Sorry. Well, I won't apologize either. Sorry.
and then he apologizes.
So what I see here is, you know, this acquisition was 2022, right? So 21, 22, post-pandemic, things were kind of on the rise. There was still a lot of silly money out there. What we're seeing overall here in California is that things are readjusting and that I, you know, maybe we're seeing this countrywide. I don't know. But I get the feeling that a lot of these layoffs and closures and strategic or innovative disposition shifts are clearly just, you know, them looking at what they need to do to keep the doors open And based on these acquisitions they made, wow, you know, things look pretty good. And it's frankly, it's hard to see the forest from the trees, the fungus from the leaves, or whatever you want to call it, when things are good and you're not really sure how things will shape and shift as we move from 21 to 22. It just looks good. And then we get to 23, 24. Currently, things are really starting to shift. And we've all been talking about this. This has been very much a center of topic, just what's happening there. And they're a big business. They've acquired a large group of breweries. And I think this is just them kind of trying to ebb some bleeding. And you call it what you want.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. If it was making money, they wouldn't do it, right? I mean, if it was doing well, if cash flow was great, they probably wouldn't have done it that way. Or maybe they would have. Who knows? I mean,
who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? It's hard to know.
You know, Monster Energy knows.
Monster Energy knows.
We also don't know.
Beverage Farm knows.
A shred of what, you know, if we had a Monster exec here, it'd be a different story, but I think we're, you know, postulating.
Let's get a Monster exec on this show.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Amazing. What am I doing?
Cookie here? Monster flat brim.
I just
to pretend exec.
Board shorts.
To pretend that we have any idea what innovation means to them is kind of just like a bit short-sighted. And it's also it kind of insinuating that there is some sort of like M&A playbook that has been copy and pasted and done a bunch of times. And
sure.
I think that defeats the purpose of why companies go in.
I mean,
in
for them buying a big brewery as the way that we treat
it's probably
going,
not
like
obvious.
Doing a small merch buy.
Yeah, right.
Like if it yeah. makes money, you know, it's fine, but let's not make a purchase that's really going to hurt us if it just fails.
Mm-hmm.
I
yeah.
mean, they probably are thinking of these totally. Things that way. And then buying, Fireman Capital.
It serves a purpose.
It certainly could be at that level.
It serves
you
a
know?
Purpose in like finance that me and probably 9,000 other brewers couldn't even pretend to know about.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably 9,900.
Maybe, yeah, closer to that.
Maybe even more.
So what about Hermit Thrush, the bird brewery?
Bird brewery.
First time I heard of it was when I read that.
Yeah, so... Intro this one, and then I want to do some letters because we've been negligent on our letters.
Hermit Thrush is just like a, I don't know, it's a brewery from Vermont that has been around for not forever, but long enough, and like growing, having friends from New, like I grew up in New England. And
what about them? What about Hermit Thrush?
They closed. Yeah. They're a sour centric brewery, based in Vermont that shut it down, and like they're, you know, they're. Obviously, I think they're bigger than Rob and I are. They're canning like sour focused beers. They're like they pulled every lever they could, and from all accounts, it's a enigmatic guy that people tended to like making beers he believed in, and
good for
it
him.
Didn't work anymore. And so
yeah,
they
sour beers, and, you know.
Yeah,
it's
never heard of it.
Yeah, I hadn't either. I don't think I had.
Yeah, they cite consumer price demands and evolving market dynamics, meaning no one wanted to pay for the amount of money it costs to make good sour beers.
Yeah, yeah.
But that translates to
did Wicked Weed close? Speaking of, are they closed?
Wicked Weed, still,
yeah.
Oh, I have no.
They're
idea.
They're still going. They're ABI bought.
I know. I just I didn't know if that. I guess my point is
they're not
with
a sour
something
only brewery though.
They were kind of known for that for a while.
Yeah, not they haven't made that shit in a long time.
Well,
sorry,
I guess
stuff.
That's
sorry,
also search. My point. My point is I'm cataloging in my mind, like, anytime I've heard something like this, Terrapin rings a bell, too. It's like a seemingly mm-hmm. small operation that gets kind of gobbled up for some reason we can't quite put our fingers on.
Hermit Thrush
wasn't
owned by, like, another conglomerate, though. They're just, like, a small brewery that, like, small by the terms we were talking about, Cigar City and Canarchy and stuff.
Yeah.
That just couldn't make a go of it anymore. Huh. That was in, like, the comings and goings
section of our show.
Yeah,
I don't know, maybe I shouldn't have brought it up, but I it was interesting because we just hit our 10-year anniversary, you know, or will hey. In July, I guess, hypothetically, and you kind of look at that and you go, yeah, I mean, a decade of running a brewery and the small family operation that we have and our dedication to the craft and you know, commitment to this product, and you go, yeah, I guess that's, you know, one way of doing it. I guess you just kind of just give up,
yeah,
or shut down, or maybe it's a partnership, and you can just see, you know, like, no, my partner doesn't want to do it, or I want to keep going, or it's just, it's, you know, partnerships are really hard. And that's what I saw when I looked at that article. I thought, you know, it's just, partnerships are tough and business is tough and things are shifting. And,
yeah,
you know, depending on, I think it's just super interesting time to think about who you are, what you are. And I think identity is, if you're just, you know, a sour brewery, obviously that's a real tough category, but it does certainly work in certain markets, and people are still drinking sour beers. It's just, you know, who are you, where are you, and, you know, how's it all working? So I think this is part of the progression we'll see. Yeah. But 10 years, it's a good haul.
This is something I think about, like, a lot, like, multiple times a day, mm-hmm, and probably at night when I'm waking up in the cold sweats. But, like, what hill do you die on? You know, like, what is the thing that, like, if you want to be a brewery with a point of view, like, I've espoused as being important, and as I need to get something out of feeling like I'm doing something important and creative, like, but where does that, what is the line there, right? Where, like, do you really want to be a sour only brewery, or do you only want to make Saison, or do you, like, what is, like, the thing that you actually, like, where is your line for, like, this is what I actually want to do, and this is what I'll do to make sure I get to keep doing the thing I actually want to do. It's different for everyone and every brewery, but, yeah, it's tough. Like, there's no answer. You can't, like, Google, what are my values? You know, it doesn't come back with
anything.
And
it's so much more than that, too.
Right.
It's like, you know, what's the deal with this guy? What's the name of the brewery?
Yeah. Hermit Thrush.
Hermit Thrush. So, like, what's his situation outside of brewing? Does he have a nest egg? Does he have this?
Right.
What's on the line? Is he going to lose his house if he stops doing it? Like, there's so much more that goes into it.
Yeah, totally.
Then I just want to keep making sour beer. It's like, right, I do want to keep making sour beer, but also I don't want to have to move and have my family, like, move out of the school system and this and right, that. And,
you,
like, there's so much, well, like, weird little stuff like that.
You can. And this goes, you funnel it down and, like, the taxonomy of all this stuff. And it always funnels back to, there is absolutely no comparison to any brewery, almost whatsoever.
Right.
Structurally, financially, logistically, all of it is entirely unique. And people don't talk about that enough because it's always apples to apples. In a lot of cases,
yeah,
you brew beer, I brew beer. It's like having, like, one of my aunts or uncles be like, have you heard of Founders? And I'm like,
right,
yeah. And, like, are you guys the same? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Of course not.
You guys have 15 packs in every cooler door in Wisconsin.
We're close.
Right?
Yeah. No. And I think the
have
thing
you heard
is
of,
like,
liquid art, you know, it's like,
yeah,
this is liquid art that we're creating.
Yeah,
and
get on board.
You know, I think we should really lean into people like, you know, Chris, who's supposed to be selling our beer. You know, that's what's really
supposed to be.
I guess
supposed
my,
to be.
My thing is, you know, if you want to sell sour beer for 20 years, I think you can. However, you have to have this, like, magical couple of pieces of that puzzle, which are namely real estate. Like, do you own it? What do you pay for it?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you have control over that? Or is somebody going to kick you out or raise your rent or whatever? You have to have autonomy at certain levels to say, I am secure enough to stick to my point of view for the long haul. And if you're not, and if you're playing by other people's rules, they're probably not going to be coming to bat for you, mm-hmm, at a certain point in time. So.
Yeah, you know, I think what you're bringing up is, I did a little thing here locally and did a Q&A for, you know, a lot of wine folks. And we have a local little movie theater here in San Helena. I don't know how many people, but it's pretty small. And they wanted to do this fork to film thing. And they had bottle condition play. And what was interesting was,
movie,
oh, it's
yeah,
a great movie about lambic and about, you know, natural fermentation sour beers. And, you know, that's, I think
shit,
you're touching on a lot of that, Rob, is that, you know, they were able to thrive, Canteon particularly, because of the tenacity of the ownership, probably the real estate and the decisions they made prior to moving into the city. that gave them the ability to be there and carry that on. And that's the real take home for me of that movie, was that, you know, this is a storyline that, you know, carries on through generations.
Yes. And to piggyback on that too, the thing that's also a piece of that puzzle, the way they tell it, is maximal volume. You know, Cantillon can only make a certain amount of beer, and they have two decisions. They can be Cantillon, and they can decide to be okay with that amount of volume hitting the world, or they can grow and then lose something along the way. And they've decided to not grow. Like, that's, they make what they make, where they make it, for the most part, unless I'm misunderstanding something. And you got to, like, either get okay with it and stick to your guns, or grow and roll the dice again. And they haven't rolled the dice. They've protected their assets and kept their family involved, for better or worse. And they're still Cantillon as a result. So it's discipline. It's financial, fiscal, logistical, professional discipline. It's kind of deciding really confidently what you want and don't want from growth, and where you want your beer. And if you can, if all those other things line up to allow you to make those decisions, you're in a good place.
You have to grow income. Like, that's almost a non-negotiable in some ways.
Yeah, they
because inflation is going to keep
their
prices. Yes. Like, so like you have to grow, but our brains are so poisoned in American craft beer. Think of that growing always means making more volume, right?
Yeah.
And scaling up, and usually, and that also then implies taking on debt to do it. Mm-hmm. But growth can just be that they have so much demand that they charge 10% more for their beer every year, right? Because it is unfortunately probably like grow or die, or be an art project. Because inflation is going to eat away at you, especially in the current last 2 years. So they haven't grown volume, but they have absolutely grown revenue.
And growing and evolution are kind of.
But don't you think that just exactly things. What you said, Mike? There, it's like we're seeing. I mean, you go to the grocery store, you buy anything. Like, we're seeing these inflation elements hit us from so many different areas. Mm-hmm. And so I mean, I think, you know, that is one of the challenges of being in the industry we're in, and so we're just gonna have to figure out a way. And we all have our niches and need to figure out that model.
Totally.
Absolutely. Can we do some letters now?
Yeah.
All right, I've got
absolutely.
A few. How where are we at, Serge? What are we on with the time? Okay. We got a little time.
Let's do a letter.
All right, we'll do a letter. I'll try to do two. We'll see. Here is a letter. It's an electronic letter. Mm. And it comes from Jack from Glen Ellen.
Hey.
Long time. It's probably our number one letter writer.
He's actually the person I was referring to that started listening to the show from episode one, listened to all
of them. Well, it's funny because you mentioned that earlier. That's why I picked this one to read.
Oh, okay. I lost my mind listening to your
podcast. Right? Or is this... Yeah.
Hey, Serge, Mike, and Chris, on episode 127, yeah, between 53 and 57 minutes in,
yep,
the round table,
very well.
The round table members discussed how many years it would take for craft Pilsner to overtake craft IPA. Guesses ranged from 6, Steve, I'm guessing that's Steve Masney. To 60, Chris, is what I said. This week marks 6 years since that discussion. Now, he also wrote this.
Jeez, an amazing fan.
Almost a month ago.
Yeah. This guy rocks.
Yeah. So while it's not amazing. In the spirit of the podcast to hold anyone accountable for what they say on the show, thank you. Very true.
Appreciate it. True fan.
I am interested to hear any revised thoughts on this debate. With the explosion of craft lager, is it more possible for pills to overtake IPA? Has high ABV convenience store tall boys a la Voodoo Ranger entrenched IPA for good, or will market retraction expose a new front runner in the years to come? Thanks for the hundreds of hours of content. The last dozen episodes have been especially great. It seems like you guys are entering a golden age in the post-Kona era of the pod.
Let's go.
Yes, post- that was also a month ago.
PKE.
So the last four episodes maybe have been dog shit. So, okay.
Yeah, well, that was probably before the Smoking the Bandit episode.
Right, right, right.
That's a very thoughtful question. I mean, there has been a great ascendance of craft brewed lagers for sure, and it still is a very small percentage of the beer that craft breweries make, and it's still very dominated by IPA. So obviously, Steve was wrong, Chris was right, as always.
Exactly.
But I think if it ever were to happen, it would ever be, it's either never going to happen or will happen sooner than 60 years. Is would be my
yeah,
my reassessing of
I'm
this.
Trying to look. So I'm looking at what lager versus IPA, because I think.
Can you call Don?
Get numbers. Beer Cruncher, aka the Beer Aficionado, aka Nostra Douglas, aka Doug Velicki, had he posted about this.
Name.
Yeah, he's been big into these lagers, and he was saying that lager is 13 times bigger than IPA nationally.
Yeah, that includes light lager.
Yeah, that includes everything.
Right.
And that's in Illinois. But it's, yeah, does that count? Like, is a craft pilsner a craft lager? Is it this and that? I mean, I don't know.
All craft lager will lump in for the sake of this argument, right? Like all the premium, quote unquote premium, which is a hilarious thing that's happening right now, where the lowest quality one is the one we're calling premium, right?
Yeah. So here's
not
the thing.
I guess they're all good quality. Don't get me wrong, but like the
here's what I think about that. I
capital
think
Q quality.
Really, what has changed in the last 6 years is I think craft will kind of maybe go away. So maybe like small brewery.
Sure.
Pilsner?
Sure.
Maybe. Well, but like.
Craft is your dad's beer at this point.
Like, I don't know.
I can't wait for that to happen. I hate craft.
Right. Do you? You hate it?
I absolutely hate it.
What do you want it? Just to be beer?
Family owned.
I don't have a good one to replace it, but I wish it would go away.
Okay.
I think that's the problem. We don't have a equally quickly understood moniker. We can just be like, oh, we're not all artisanal breweries. We're not small brewery inherently is not going to work.
Right.
Right. So what are you going to call it?
Well, all right. So let me revise. So I'm guessing I said 60 based on six, right? So I said it's going to be 10 times that 60 or whatever.
Sure.
I could see. I really do think it comes down to perception, because I do think what we think of as what will be renamed, but what as craft beer is
independent.
That's like
beer.
That is so IPA centric. Still, it doesn't have the super stronghold that it does, but
it's probably like a similar number to like Doug saying all lager to IPA. If you take that like 13 times number,
yeah,
it's probably a similar number.
I don't understand.
That there's like 13 times the sales of
IPA
to
like everything else.
Lager, yeah.
Yeah.
To lager, yeah. Not like.
Right.
Or independently produced.
I don't
lager.
See it happening anytime.
Not counting Yingling.
Soon.
Or counting Yingling. Who cares? It's probably still
right. Not right. I don't. I think IPA or whatever, like cold IPA or.
It's a lager, though.
XIPA. Hey. But it's
is it?
It's innovated.
Data's concerned.
It's made of lager yeast. I have no idea.
I mean that is.
I don't know how many cold IPAs
it's not
are actually
craft,
showing up in scan
how about
data.
This?
So.
It's not a craft pilsner, which
that's
is
true.
What the
it's not
yeah.
a craft pilsner. You're right.
So I still think we're a ways out. How about you guys? Just quickly around the room so we can get to the next letter. Thank you, Jack.
I think the way that we think of it now, it will never happen.
Yeah.
The way that we think of like craft breweries, whatever we're going to call them in the future. Craft brewery is now tied to IPA the same way that macro brewery is tied to macro lager.
Mm.
I think that it's more likely that small breweries go away than lager actually becomes a thing that they sell more of.
Okay. And Rob, what do you think?
Price.
I think a lot of it's based on how hard really good lager producers work to get their message out.
Okay.
I think making
really, that's what you think is the...
That's what I'm thinking right now. I think making it cool is half the battle, and I think cool breweries are making it cool. And I think that's a slow... it's going to be a slow trend, but I don't think it's 60. I think it's less than... if I'm going...
Yeah.
I think it's less than 60.
Sure. I mean, I think 60 was, for me... Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. So if I have to revise it, I think it's going to be, you know... Still past any foreseeable future. How about
is it because
that?
These are the two? Like, what's the other? Is there a...
I don't know. It could be something that comes in and
I'm interested
explodes
in that,
everything.
In the wild horse that comes,
that'd
comes
be great.
Up from behind, yeah.
How about you, Niall? Do you think that IPA is going to be dethroned in whatever we think of as craft beer anytime soon?
I was kind of thinking about it as...
You're in the
been
land
listening
of IPA,
to all your
man.
Responses,
yeah.
And I kind of think there's a different way of looking at the question, and you could ask, will IPA garner a higher price than lager overall over time, and or will... You know, will lager just kind of sustain a different, you know, price bracket? You know what I mean? Like, do we charge more for IPA than we do for, you know, lagers and pilsners? And, you know, it depends on the brewery, obviously. We don't, but I definitely think in general, typically you might see double IPAs and double dry hopped IPAs. You know, it costs a little bit more to make them. I mean, that's another way of like kind of looking at the question a little bit long term is... And then if there's no popularity or there's no interest for IPAs, then certainly I think that, you know, would inevitably occur that lagers would overtake IPAs. It's just kind of like the trend line of the populace. Like, what are they consuming? What do they want? And inevitably, producers are going to make what the consumer wants.
Really?
If you can get more money from an IPA, you know, heck, I mean, you're going to always see that as a skew.
I'll punctuate the thought on that, Niall, too, is just, I know Chris wants to move on, but
I
believe one thing that doesn't get talked about because a lot of data gets thrown around is the more subjective angle, which is we're not talking about what palate fatigue at scale looks like. And I think at a certain point, people generally, like across the board, will just get sick of the enormous flavor and go back to something like lager. So
yes, but will it be craft lager? That's the question.
The way it's looking
defines craft.
It's going to be Modelo.
Yeah, yeah, and what that's kind of where just fun. Yeah, right, and that's where I'm starting from. Is like yeah. So it's a. I think the question has really become harder to answer 6 years later. I think it's harder to answer now.
Yeah.
Because I think things are so just, the market is just so, so different that
it's
way. But it's interesting
it's
to think about. Yeah.
Energy drink.
Let's do one more.
Nice,
yeah.
Dude.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah. Wow.
Nice.
We have got one more question. I wanted to do two. It's just not going to happen. So
the second one, though.
We've got, I want to do three. I want to do two more. We're going to do one more.
Got it.
Sorry. So you got to get the heck out of here. We have another letter. If you want to write a letter, you can do it electronically. You can send it to insiders@craftbeertemple.com, or you can send an actual written letter, typed, printed out, whatever. You can print out a letter. It doesn't even need to be a handwritten letter. We also talk about handwritten letters.
Find someone with a printer.
Yeah, we have people who... So find someone with a printer.
I bet 50% of the people...
Don't have printers?
Don't have printers. I don't have a printer.
Okay.
Well, do you have a printer?
I was
printer,
just about to fax
know.
You guys.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I don't know where the power cord is.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
So it's there.
We're millennials. We don't have printers,
okay.
Dude.
Well, I mean, you seem to print out invoices.
Don't tell Kevin, but that's all Beguile's paper.
Right. Okay. So, all right. So we have, or you can send it to.
Sit in their bathroom where their
in
printer
the show
is.
Notes, in the show notes, we have. we have our address, and you can send us one. We love it. You'll get some sweet. Sweet three-tier merch.
We promise.
We have two people right now that we're sending three-tier merch to.
And just name, don't want to fourth-tier merch.
Name that's, your don't name ask your for item. Tier. No, don't. Because you'll...
That's importer merch.
Yeah. So here, it's this is about the last episode we just did. So this episode came out yesterday, and we already have a letter.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Episode number 322, Euro Thread Wet Foam.
Is this Tom?
Which was the name. No, this okay. is from Art. Dear Chris and Mike, I made it through your recent episode. Remember we said, if anyone made it through, let us know, because we thought everyone would stop listening. And so I'm responding to your calls for emails. Well, thank you very much, Art.
Thank you.
So you're welcome to all the three-tier merch that Don...
That was the official. Email? That's the email?
No, no, oh, there's still more. You didn't ask for questions, but I have to know. And let's read the whole thing. Don't just blurt out the answers to here, Mike. You didn't ask for questions, but I have to know. Is the unaired Zombie Dust Radio Hour a real thing? I've been a listener for years, and from time to time throughout those years, I've wondered about this. I see it as a bit of fate that you asked for an email while Eric was guesting on the show. Of course, I've always assumed the quote-unquote original Zombie Dust Radio Hour was a joke. Unlike your favored beer pour, the style and delivery of humor on the show has consistently been bone dry. Ooh, he's making a wet foam joke here. but there's something about the repetition, the flat effect, how it all keeps going and going. As the joke continues to not end, the more unsure I become. It's actually quite possible that a Zombie Dust Radio Hour episode was recorded and unaired. At points in my life, I've searched the archives for the original reference. I don't think I've found it. It has perhaps always been and never will be. Indeed, this last episode has crystallized an idea. The idea that for me, your jokes occupy a liminal space of complete credulity and incredulity at the same time. Never mind. I don't want to know if the Zombie Dust Radio Hour was a real thing. Serge, keep up the great work. Art from Chicago. And then moments, actually not moments later. Yeah, 2 minutes later, another email from Art. Good God, actual question, is Serge real? So to that I will say thank you for the letter.
Serge, come on.
Thank you for the letter.
That's my favorite letter of all time.
Yeah,
that there you gets go. Two pieces of three-tier merch.
Yeah, there you go. Three top-tier pieces of three-tier
that's right.
merch for Art. Thank you very much for the letter. Eric is actually in the house. He was. We were talking to him right during now. The break.
Yeah.
So we were doing an impromptu Zombie Dust Radio Hour out there. He was that's crushing right. Zombos when we were out there.
He's always crushing Zombos. Yeah.
So thank you, Art, very much for that letter. If you would like some three-tier merch, which I'm guessing you do, just let us know what size.
Who does?
Or you know, what you want. Yeah. Well, what size?
You want the 90-gallon Yeti cooler?
What size? Yeah, I want the 90-gallon Yeti cooler. Yeah. Three-tier merch.
You can. We'll row it to you.
Yeah, exactly. We'll put a outboard on it and go. So
that with letter, that letter made my day.
Yeah, I'm glad we got to it.
Yeah, me too.
And we actually got to it in a timely manner, unlike some of these other letters that came in like 2 months ago. Thanks to everyone. Thanks to Niall and Rob for coming on the show. Thanks to quote-unquote Serge for helping us out here and fading stuff in and out.
Does he exist? Is he there?
I don't know. You can't see him. Tell me the truth, Niall. You have a camera. Do you see Serge right now? You can see me, Rob, and Mike. You don't?
Not sure.
Yeah, there's no Serge.
I think he might be kind of... He's hidden inside the zombie dust.
Yeah, exactly. He's
the
in there.
The zombie zeitgeist. Yeah. Serge exists.
Is there anything anyone would like to say before we get out of here? Anything? No?
Thanks for having us.
Oh, it
was a good time.
See, I was waiting for someone to actually be
finally
appreciative.
I think you're the first
for
guest
once.
That thanks.
I really appreciate it. No,
I'm just kidding.
I love you, man.
Fun to see how the no, sausage
it's been awesome. Thank you, guys. We will see you next week. So long. Remember, this is what we wanted. Remember, this is what we said. To never be heard or seen from again, 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 again. Remember, this is what we wanted. Remember, this is what we said. To never be heard or seen from again, 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 again. Remember, this is what we wanted. Remember, this is what we said. To never be heard or seen from again, 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 again.